Denise, I'm excited to have you on the show. I want you to talk about your upcoming film and how you got connected with Dr. John Mack, who I have had a lot of respect for over the years. Why don't you tell a little bit about yourself?
Sure. First of all, thank you, Martin, for having me on. I love talking about Dr. Mack and the film that we're developing. I worked in Hollywood for many years as a creative executive, story editor, VP of production, and I had the privilege of working with some pretty great writers and directors. And then I formed my own company, Make Magic Productions. And about, it's going on 7 years now, the story of Dr. Mack was brought to my attention in a really kind of mystical way. What happened was my ears started ringing out of the blue. It was kind of freaky. And doctors just shrugged and said, well, we don't know what to do. There's nothing we can do. And shortly thereafter, I started to get a very strong intuitive message. The intuition said to me to find a medical intuitive. And I was like, what? Well, find a medical intuitive? Okay. Well, long story short, I found a medical intuitive who was working out of a metaphysical bookstore in Los Angeles. And within minutes of me walking into the store, and she asked me what I did, and I said, I'm a film producer. She said, I got to tell you this story because I think it would make a great film. And I've tried to get the attention of other people, producers, and I couldn't. And I knew immediately. I mean, it gave me chills when she told me the story of Dr. Mack. He had been dead a year. As it turns out, she had been a patient of his. And that's how she knew him. And so I took this gift that I was given in that exchange with this woman and went researching. And the more I read about him, I was just like blown away. It was like, I cannot believe this man or this story or what a great film this is going to make. And the potential of this film to spark a real dialogue about the possibility that we're not alone in the universe was just, I mean, it was just so exciting to me. So then I embarked on getting the life rights, and that took 4.5 years.
Wow.
So, yeah. But eventually I did. I created relationships with the Mack family, and ultimately they entrusted me with the rights. And then what I did with the rights was shop it around Hollywood, because I know this kind of story doesn't come along very often. And I came up against some obstacles, which were not surprising, but were not something that I was willing to compromise on, because I feel very responsible for doing this story without sensationalism, with it being authentic, with it not making Dr. Mack look like a fool, which a lot of people would like him to look that way. And so what we chose to do, myself and my team, was to create a crowdfunding campaign just for the development of the script, which would allow us to use all the personal and professional archives that have been granted to us, some incredible stuff, like some of the abductees have given us their private clinical sessions with Dr. Mack, and a lot of great stuff. We have an unpublished autobiography that he wrote before he was killed. And so the purpose of the campaign is to be able to hire a writer and develop the script in-house and then go back and have it financed in a more conventional way. So that's kind of where we are with it.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of easy for us to assume that everybody knows who Dr. Mack is. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail because most people interested in this field do know who he is. But let's just more or less talk about him in general, just for the person that may have never heard of him.
Sure. So Dr. John Mack was head of psychiatry at Harvard University. He was a Pulitzer Prize winning author. He was very highly regarded, and he was real left brain, very materialistic worldview. He was asked to meet with people who claimed to be abducted by aliens. And this was really not something at all in his wheelhouse as a scientist and as a doctor. But these people were really desperate. They really needed someone to help them. And he became curious what the underlying psychiatric syndrome was. So he studied over 200 abductees. But he didn't do it at Harvard because he was kind of embarrassed that, you know, he's studying aliens. So he set up a makeshift office in his home. And one by one, they came to his home. He went to great lengths to keep them apart from each other so they wouldn't be influencing each other's stories. And he used everything he had as a psychiatrist. And he even said to his wife, you know, anybody who thinks they've been abducted by aliens has got to be mentally ill. But after using his entire psychiatric arsenal, he had a change of heart and mind. And according to his clinical assessment and judgment, these people were not crazy and they were not lying. And this was truly shocking to Dr. Mack. I mean, it really unsettled him to have his worldview that he was trained in his entire life, because by this time he was 60 years old, uprooted and challenged. And so he traveled the world and he met with African shaman and Australian aborigines and other people around the world, corroborated very similar stories. And he came back home and compiled his findings in his best-selling book, Abduction. And he went on a book tour. So now he's on Oprah, Larry King, the BBC, basically saying that aliens were real. And Harvard heard about this, and they were mortified. So, you know, mortified, their head of psychiatry was doing this. So they convened a secret committee to try to discredit him, to take away his tenure and to basically ruin his reputation. And for 14 months, they put him through what amounted to a witch hunt. He was mocked in the press. His colleagues thought he had lost his mind. His wife divorced him. And yet, Dr. Mack stayed loyal to the abductees. He said, there's an authentic mystery here. We can't turn away. And when an African bushman and an upscale New England housewife are telling the same story, we have to take the conversation seriously. He went on to write another book, Passport to the Cosmos, which really reflects how John Mack changed. He became, by his own words, intuitive, heart-based, spiritual, right brain, basically. He shifted, and his entire worldview changed. And like many of the abductees, he went through a transformation the way they did through their abduction experience. So it's a big story. It's a deep story. It's complex. It's emotional. It's powerful. And I believe it will challenge us to, like I said earlier, have a real dialogue about what so many of us already believe to be true, which is we're not alone in the universe.
Right, right. The lawyer that up on the chat room, someone is stating here, one of our regular listeners, he's saying that the lawyer who defended him against Harvard, Daniel Sheenan, is speaking near Toronto at the end of this month.
Yeah, well, actually, there are two lawyers who defended John. One was Danny Sheehan, and one was Eric McLeish. Mm-hmm. And they both defended him in different capacities. But yeah, Danny Sheehan is great. He's amazing, and he helped John out quite a bit.
You know, if the listener out there wants to watch a really great clip on just what a gentleman and how wonderful John Mack was, there's a lot on YouTube. And one that I really like and have paid a lot of attention to is the 62 school children, excuse me, in Zimbabwe, Africa, that saw the crafts land and the aliens, and how all 62 children just described exactly the same thing, and they were horrified. And if you watch John Mack interact with those children, you can see what a solid guy he was with them. Is any part of that going to be in your film?
Yeah, it is, because John was going through the trial with Harvard, and they were really, you know, putting him through the ringer, and he got a call from a BBC reporter, his name was Tim Leach, who wanted a statement from John about the aerial school sighting, and John didn't know anything about it. So at the request of the headmaster in Zimbabwe, John got on a plane and went to interview the children, which is what you were just describing. It's the footage is astounding. Mm-hmm. It's just astounding how sincere these children are and how uncoached, and the things that they say that was transmitted to them mind to mind from the beings. And John started out as a child psychiatrist, and it really shows in that footage how gentle he is and
right.
Working with them. So it's important for many reasons, because at home, while Harvard is skewering him, he's in South Africa basically being vindicated by these children. And it's a powerful juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm. I would really love to figure out how to get in touch with one of these children now, because that was back in the 1990s, and they're all in their 20s now. And, you know, it was such a profound incident, and it certainly changed, I don't want to say all of their lives, but most of their lives, I'm sure.
Yeah, actually, they're doing a documentary on those kids.
I do have a guest coming up. He was there, along with Dominique, on site with John Mack. And
Dominique and Randy are doing
Randy is a
documentary.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, Randy will be on to talk about that eventually. I did meet him, and he agreed to be on the show, and that will be great. So on the chat room, there was a question for you, and it just says, can you go over the case that stands out the most to you?
There was a guy named Peter. His real name is all over the internet, but just for the sake of this conversation, his name was Peter. And he was a patient of John's. He agreed to be put through additional tests, additional battery of psychological tests. And his experience was so profound and so transformative. He went on the speaking circuit with John. He was on Oprah with John. He was extremely courageous back in the 90s. If you go to our website, you'll see a video that he did for us recently, 20 years later. And, you know, if you want to know the details of his story, just pick up John's book, Abduction, because he's a chapter in the book.
So let's say all the funding comes through. Can you go into some of the detail of what you're going to be covering in that?
In the screenplay?
Yes. Yes.
Sure. Now, these are just broad strokes.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know structurally how it's going to be written, or even how it's going to end up being edited. But we're going to begin with the years where John Mack starts the abduction research, which was the early 90s, and follow him through the research, his travels around the world. A big part of it is his conflict with Harvard, his transformation because of the work, his going down to Zimbabwe, and the relationships that he forms with the abductees. And then in 2004, he's killed by a speeding car in London.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's just a beat, 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 beat. But that in no way does that really reflect, you know, the whole dramatic arc and everything of this piece.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would imagine for you to get the permission to have the rights to this must have been very difficult, because from what I understand, they are very cautious in what the family does. So how did you get involved and actually get close enough where they trusted you? Did you build a relationship over a certain amount of time?
Yeah, I mean, I tracked down one of John's sons. I wrote him a letter. Then we had an initial call, and it was him, and there were other people in the room. I remember I was on the speaker. It was a process of gaining their trust, of convincing them that I was sincere, mm-hmm. and very protective of John Mack's legacy. And, you know, they just decided to trust me. And that's no small thing on their part, because John had been dead only a year. Here I am, I show up knocking on their door, basically saying, I want to do this story. You know, they don't know me. They don't know Hollywood. Not that I'm Hollywood, but this is where I've worked, you know, so that's how they perceived me. And, I mean, I don't know even what that is, Hollywood. Do you know what I mean? It's just a iconic whatever name. But I am an independent producer who works in Hollywood. So they were very leery of that, understandably. But I do think that obviously on some level they wanted his story to be told.
I was just going to ask you that question.
Yeah, because if they didn't, they would have never said yes.
That's right. It's a story that I think must be told and not forgotten. And it's fascinating when someone can actually have the courage to do what he did with his stature and, you know, really take that leap to really look into the subject seriously and open-mindedly.
Yeah.
One of the great things I think about him.
Yeah, and I hear that over and over and over again, and I get emails from people all around the world, you know, especially after I do a show like this, and people who've met him or in some way had some sort of experience with him. To a person, they talk about his compassion, his humility, his kindness, his intellect, his open-mindedness, his open-heartedness, I mean, across the board. But let me say this, you know, we are creating a three-dimensional human being in this film. And so this is not going to be someone who walks on water. He does have his flaws like all of us, mm-hmm. you know, and his shortcomings. And that's also what will help make the character interesting. So, but nevertheless, my point was he really is a beloved figure to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I put Bud Hopkins up there in kind of, you know, the same realm as, you know, he was also a person that a lot of people really looked up to as well. Of course, he didn't have as much to risk, but he was another pretty solid person really looking into this seriously. Do you mention Bud at all? Is Bud going to be any part of this?
Yes, because Bud was actually, I mean, it began with Stan Grof, who was a transpersonal psychologist, he still is, and he gave John a chapter called Transformation, Alien Abduction, I can't remember the title, but he was the first one to bring it to John's attention, and then John and Bud Hopkins met. And actually, it was Bud who gave John a box of letters from abductees from around the world. And he said, John, you know, to me, they're perfectly sane, but you're the psychiatrist. You decide. Hmm. And that's kind of kickstarted John. He took the box of letters home and he started going through them. But here's where Bud and John departed. Bud was a literalist. He believed that the experiences were literal and three-dimensional, period. That's where John started out, but it's not where John ended. He, after several years, came to believe that it was more interdimensional. And that's why he said to Harvard, we need to adapt a new paradigm of reality. And that's why Harvard threw up their hands and said, John, if only you had told us you had discovered a new psychiatric syndrome, but you're asking us to redefine reality and you know, and that's, so that's another way that John was different from David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins and many other researchers. He took it into a very spiritual realm. He felt that the acknowledgement of these experiences would help us as a planet transform in consciousness. So what he did that other researchers didn't was he bridged science and consciousness, which is huge.
And when do you perceive that you'll be actually starting to work on this film? Let's just say the funding goes through. Is this something you're going to work on right away?
Well, let me just say I've been working on it for 7 years. So
wow.
So I won't be, you know, it's an ongoing process. However, when the development money is in place, the right writer and myself and the consultants who are on board will spend several months crafting the screenplay.
Okay, so I may have had this thing confused when I first was speaking to you. I was picturing like a documentary, but we're not talking that. We're talking a screenplay. We're talking actors. And is that what we're doing? Is that what you're doing? You're making actually
a film?
That
is correct. This is a major motion picture. This is a kind of film you buy a ticket, you go buy your popcorn, you sit down, and you just have an incredible experience, and hopefully you come out and you are just wowed.
Oh my goodness, you know, now I'm really psyched about this. I'm really excited. I would love to watch a movie like that. That is great. So, I hope this thing really works out and it becomes a reality. At this point, it's there's a lot of hoops to jump through still, it appears. Yes?
Sure. As with anything that's, you know, big and has value and you know, big endeavor like this, but it's done all the time. Films are made. I've been in the business long enough to know how to put one foot in front of the other. It will get done. You know, now, it will get done.
Do you want to talk about some of the other films that you've been involved with that sort of, does any of that make any sense to this, or is this totally out of the realm of what you normally do?
It does make sense because my entire experience in the business is working on feature films. I mean, my first job out of USC graduate school, I was basically a fly on the wall for E.T. and Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, that was my first job, my first foray. And then I worked at 20th Century Fox and a company called The Movie Company, and I was a director of creative affairs for another company, and then I was vice president of a company. We produced Platoon, which won the Best Picture Oscar and Best Director Oscar. So my training is all in this realm.
Wow, that is
big
amazing.
Commercial feature film.
Mm-hmm. Someone is saying when they heard you say the screenplay, they were thinking about the Travis Walton experience and hope that doesn't go down, you know, the same path as Fire in the Sky. And it sounds to me that you are really looking to keep his story very, very accurate. Now, I have to say that a lot of times people are always trying to sensationalize something because it doesn't seem like enough. I mean, how are you going to maintain that equality where you don't get so tempted to go over the edge and make something more sensational?
Well, I don't know the film that you referred to. I mean, I think I vaguely am aware of it. What was it called? Watchers in the Sky?
No, Fire in the Sky with Travis Walton, abduction in Arizona back in 1978, I believe it was. And he was still glad the movie was made, but some things were changed because the producers of the film just wanted to make it more sensationalized and, you know, did a lot of things different than they actually happened. He went along with it. But does talk about how it sort of bothered him quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news is that I'm the producer of the film, John Mack, and I am committed to it being done as a classy, sophisticated, entertaining, provocative, commercial, entertaining movie. It is a fictional film, however. It's not a documentary. So it's not going to completely connect the dots to John's life, but it will capture the spirit of John Mack's life and of the important events that are, you know, relevant to the story. So I think everybody knows what that means. You see a movie like, you know, any picture that's about a real person. Ray comes to mind. I think it was about Ray Charles, right? Or there are any number of them. And you know, we know when we're moved by them. They may not be detail by detail exact facts, but they capture enough authenticity that you're satisfied.
Right. Myself and a lot of people in the field are going to definitely line up to see a movie like this. But what about John Doe out there who has never really looked into the subject? What is going to catch his eye to go visit a movie like this?
Well, I think that pretty much everyone on the planet has an opinion about aliens. I think the facts are 50% believe there are aliens and 50% don't believe there are aliens. But there's nothing better than controversy to help promote a film. You know, you could see this film and be completely against the idea of aliens, but you want to see it just so you can poo-poo it. And then the other 50%, I just envision them flocking to the theaters to see the subject matter handled in a way that Hollywood rarely handles it, which is presenting aliens so that they're not just here to conquer us or threaten us or scare us or take us over. You know, this is going to be much more thoughtful and provocative. So I just see that pretty much everyone is an audience for this film.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier that he sort of had thoughts that all of these encounters were possibly interdimensional or just part of them. Did he ever elaborate on that?
That they were both. That they were physical, three-dimensional, and or they were interdimensional because some of the abductees said that, you know, it's possible just the astral body has the experience. But John Mack said that doesn't make it any less real. Though, you know, the physical body may stay where it is, but the astral body is taken and travels and goes into different dimensions or whatever. The point is it's something we don't really have a language for yet or an understanding of yet. But that doesn't mean that it's not happening or that it's impossible.
So I want to talk a little bit about you and how you became open-minded enough to do this. Did you ever explore any this part of the subject before you ran into that woman?
I really did not put much attention on the subject of aliens per se. However, really from the minute I got to the planet, as I said earlier, I had a very highly developed intuitive nature, and I was always kind of aware of the veil, you know, like what other dimension, what took place behind the veil. And it was came naturally to me as a young girl to hear dead people, you know, have dead relatives talk to me and other kinds of beings. And it was very natural to me. So when I heard about John Mack and his story and how he took it into the subject into a spiritual realm, I just said, I'm the person for this job. I can do justice to this story because I understood what he was trying to say.
Now, have you, in your career and in your position, have you received any ridicule about you actually tackling this subject?
Not that I can think of. Gotten a lot of support.
Mm-hmm. Well, you look at it this way also, or I do anyway, is, you know, John Mack himself, here he is, you know, has this prestigious Harvard position, and, you know, I mean, you can't really think of too many places in the States anyway of, you know, unless someone is in politics where they could have such damage to their career as that position. And that's one of the things that stands out the most with me when it comes to him.
Yeah, how much he put on the line, for sure.
Right.
Huge, huge.
I understand that he was pretty open-minded most of his life, and something about, I read about his parents or his upbringing was pretty interesting. Is there anything to talk about when it comes
well,
to that?
Well, his mother died when he was 9 months old, and his father remarried. He was brought up in Manhattan in a very intellectual but atheist home. Even though they were Jewish, they were intellectuals. They were not religious. I believe his mother was an economist. His father was a doctor. You know, education was very important. And he was a left brain guy, no doubt about it. That was his worldview. Rational, materialistic, you know, that was the world that he was raised in and the world that he knew.
Now, I know a lot of people have tried to make a conspiracy over his death, which my own thoughts are it was just an accident. Someone was drinking behind the wheel, and it was just an accident. Do you hear a lot about that?
Yeah, people ask about that a lot, and people like to think that it was a conspiracy and, you know, mull it around. But I agree with you and with the family that it was a drunk driving accident. He was in London. You know, if you've ever gone to London, you know how easy it is to look the wrong way. And
mm-hmm. Right.
He got hit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A very simple thing that anyone could do. Someone on the message board wants to find out what is your perspective on aliens in the very ancient past?
Well, I only have an opinion, and it's not a very educated one. But I do believe that they have been here from the beginning of our existence. I believe that aliens serve as watchers of the planet and always have and continue to do so. As a matter of fact, one of the very consistent messages that the abductees got was that we need to take care of the planet. And mm-hmm. if we don't, we're going to lose it.
And, you hear that over and over and over and over. And
yes.
even with those 62 children in Zimbabwe, they said
yes.
that they had the feeling, those feelings that they had never had before, that, you know, we are destroying the planet and we have to take care of it.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's enough to give anyone goosebumps right there, if you
yeah.
ask me.
And one little girl said, they told me that we're getting too technologized. Now, what
yeah.
eight-year-old knows how to say
yeah.
that, you know?
Yeah, we have the bottleneck of technology to get through where we don't destroy ourselves here.
Yeah.
Another question up on the board. John Mack and Bud Hopkins, did they ever discuss alien DNA and human DNA mixing, in other words, hybrids?
Several of John's patients talked about the alien-human dual identity, that when they were taken and the aliens, you know, that there was some kind of hybrid program going on, and whether that, why, you know, I don't know why, but it's been conjectured that it was, you know, when we destroy ourselves, this hybrid species will be here to be able to, you know, carry on. So John did, again, if you look in his book Abduction, he talks about that in great depth. You know, like some of the abductees feel that the part of them that was left on the ship is more important or a bigger draw for them emotionally than the mate that they left back here on Earth. And it causes, as you can imagine, a lot of problems in a marriage, per se, you know, for instance. So, yeah, he did address that.
Now, so you've been at this particular project or subject for about 7 years, if I heard you right. And
mm-hmm.
did you always conceive the thoughts about what you mentioned just a few minutes ago, that you believe that they've always been here and guardians of the planet? Or is this something that you've actually contemplated since you've been looking into this topic more deeply?
I think it's something that I've come to be aware of since I've been, you know, having my attention on this topic. I've always had an interest in it and somewhat of a connection to other dimensions, but I've learned so much more and you know, recently because of the project.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We had a very interesting question up on the message board. Upon John's death, it is alleged that an acquaintance he was staying with went to the morgue and John appeared to them. When the acquaintance asked about the aliens and what he'd learned from the other side, he was supposed to have said, "They are not what we thought." Have you ever heard that story?
Yeah, I have heard that story. And I don't know about that particular quote, but I do know that several people around the world who are mediums, psychics, whatever you want to call it, including the very first woman who told me about John, have contacted me and told me that they've had direct contact with him since he passed over. And they've given me various messages, not to me, but just things that he has said allegedly through them. And one of the things was that when he was killed, he said it was okay. I was very tired. It didn't hurt. And I'm continuing my work over here.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty amazing. Well, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you this evening. And I
Thank
wish
you, Martin.
All the luck in the world, and let's stay in touch. I want to definitely be sitting in the premiere of that.
Fantastic. You got it.
All right. Well, that's it for our show today. Denise, I want to thank you once again. And
thank you, Martin.
And we definitely want to have you on before this movie is coming out. And you can check us out live next week here at the Dark Matter Radio Network. This is Martin Willis, and we'll see you next week.